I'm looking at your beautiful newest collection, and I was just
Thank you.
so tell me, like up front, what's on your mind regarding this? What's the first thing that comes up? What inspired this?
Yeah, what inspired this is I wanted to make something really positive. That when I started, I made this work in the spring of 2021. So this project is actually recreating this spring. And in Holland, of course, we also had COVID, and there was like a lockdown. And I really needed nature and beauty and space. And I wanted to do something really like positive. And yeah, if I only went to this is all shot in the place. It's called the Stille Kern or
Yes.
Silent Core. And there's not much real nature around Amsterdam. Everything is man touched or man made. But this is really a little bit of a rewilded area. And it's very quiet. And I only went shooting when it was extremely sunny, just like bright sunny skies. And I did that because when you have this really bright sunlight, the colors really come out. So this, it starts really slowly, the autumn when the winter is almost over. And you walk through nature, everything is brownish and reddish and yellowish, and you have all these colors, and actually it's beautiful, also in winter. And I've also previously made work about that. There's a lot of color in forest and in nature. Everybody has this idea. Of course, I'm from Western Europe, but in winter, everything is gray and nature is dead and there's nothing to see, But then nothing more is true. If you take a camera and with the right light, the colors will just pop out. So this project is about positivity, but it is also about colors, and I really am interested in colors and what colors can do with you and where they take you. So in the last days of winters last year, I got this idea because it was also a very bright sunny day, and I went there for like a walk, and then I thought like, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna just shoot this spring and manically. So
Yeah.
I went for it. So that's a little bit how it started.
Well, it's very interesting. Like, for a second, at a first glance, my first impression was that it was indeed a generative work, like code, really, really. I mean, we have this like phantasmagorical, not really well understood aspect of generative art made with code. So I think it's easy to capture the imagination of people who are not that knowledgeable in technical pursuits, to actually think that this could be done that way. And I believe it's because it's a, like, even though it's a very familiar subject, the way you portray it, it's so intense. First of all, it's like a this you achieve this beautiful abstraction, almost in some pieces, almost like a Pollock-like density, that it's so gorgeous to see. I have an idea, Misha. Like, in Zen Buddhism, they mention a lot an idea about the impossibility of clapping with one hand, so you need always a clash of polarities, a clash of diverse energies for a spark to be possible, like this third state that comes, from the clashing of two forces. And your work takes me to that place because it has such a technical, almost engineering element to it, but all, at the same time, it's so, as you said, tender and optimistic, and it's almost like a triumph. over an excess of digitality.
Yes, for sure, for sure. Yeah, I really wanted to immerse myself to really like dive into it, and when I photograph, I'm quite a technical photographer, so I'm yes, I really work with high resolution camera and hand focused and tripod, and I start to work, and then I just let myself drift in a way, you know. I just let myself float with the camera, and it starts. It's a little bit, cranky, but after like the 10 minutes, I'm really in, and then, I'm just somehow, letting go in a way, you know, to really to dive in. And I've always been fascinated by abstraction, and I also love abstract art, and I also love painting and looking at paintings. And last year I also started in the crypto space, and I think I started out like January, something like that. So while I was making this work, I was also collecting a lot of generative art on Hikkatnunk at the same time and at different platforms, and I was looking at a lot of stuff. So also these patterns and these structures that, I had exactly this idea, like nature has this mystical algorithm, so something that we really can't get into a computer, I guess, but you never know. But that's also the question I ask, like, should we, you know, we might not even have to do that because you know, it's already there. We can go out and immerse ourselves in this
Misha, what is this isn't film, right? Is this a digital?
Yeah, it's high res. I used to work a lot on film. I shot for 25 years only slide film, 4x5 inch with a Linhof Technica, technical camera, and I only used this film that was like Ektachrome E100G. And this film, I could just dream with this film. I would load it, and I just at some point I just needed one exposure, and I also used it in a way that the slide would be also the example for the color of the print. So the reference. So I got it up to a level that in camera I knew how to expose this film at a certain moment that it would be just right, and I could just use it as an example. So if I would overexpose, I would also make like an overexposed print, you know, in that way of thinking. But then, you know, at a certain point, it got harder and harder to get this film. And then I think a few years ago, the really high-res digital cameras came into my reach, and I started experimenting, and then I bought a technical camera from Kambal, and you could just click this on the back, you know, of the camera, and then you had I had the technical camera, and I could shoot digital, and actually I must admit that on the level I'm working right now with digital, it's actually much better than slide film 4x5. I can really, you know, the color reach, you know, of this digital chip, it's so huge. And also, if you look at this work, you know, it is shot in very harsh sunlight, like bang, like bright.
Yeah, there are no shadows. When I saw this, I immediately thought about like
Still,
those
it's
more
soft,
esoteric.
and it's because, you know, you have if you expose right, I always look to the, you know, the graph on the camera, and if you get everything in you can in post-production, get all the contrasts exactly right and get all the colors out, which I find very important. But if you're wondering now, oh, is this guy manipulating, what's he doing? Because that's always the different point. But actually, I'm shooting a lot color checkers and gray cards. Mm-hmm. And I try to be exact as possible. So the colors you're seeing, I'm really want them actually to be the colors from reality. I want it to be real, because reality is so fantastic and so amazing that you don't need you don't need to add something to it. You know, if you really look and really experience, you know, reality as reality, it's already mind-blowing. Yes. And I think everything we add somehow it diminishes somehow this experience you can have with your camera. So that's what I do in post. I try to get it as exact as possible.
Alia, I see you here. Like, please come up anytime.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Good morning. Where are you?
Good morning.
What's this location?
Hi, first, I live in Los Angeles.
Okay.
I'm so excited to be here with you and hear you speak. Doesn't know Michel
for me.
Channel on the Obscura Discord for philosophy and technology, and I've learned so much from you the last
Thank
couple
you.
Months reading all the posts. It's been, you know, I'm like many, very new to all of this, and every day is something new. But I'm so interested. First of all, I love this work, and like Roberto, I actually thought it was not. And I can't believe the two of us have thought that other people haven't thought of that as well. And so it's actually kind of miraculous to learn that it's not. But I'm wondering what is that? Just think it's other or something additional, when in fact, to your point just now, like, reality is amazing, right?
You were cutting out
thoughts on that, or?
You cut out a little bit, but I think I got your question. Yeah, but the way I look at that, is what is really beautiful also about this mystical algorithm of nature is you can see it's always the same. But at the same time, it's always different. And exactly this idea is the basis of life, of what we actually are, or how reality presents us to it. So everything looks the same all the time. Everything is the same. But everything is also, at the same time, totally different. And what is like a constant in life is actually that everything changes. So this is the same doubleness, you know. You have like a constant, but the constant is change. And this is in the deeper sense also like the mystical stuff behind this reality. So I think also in these forms, like in geometric forms and in like fractal like stuff, somewhere there is what life is. And what I actually am doing is generative art, in the sense that like art, you can see it as the teacher of the art of the nature. You can see it as the teacher of the art, and nature is just like generating, you know, images, and I'm only documenting it, you know. So I make a document of what is generated, and that's why I also do it over the course of time. So nature is in a way like dropping all this and changing this, and these changes. I'm just like, I'm a documentary photographer, you know, in that sense. Just making a record of what nature is generating. Well, yeah, maybe it's a little bit too deep, but that's how I see it.
No, it's perfect. No, I think that's perfect. And I think that you and I come to landscape photography with very similar thoughts about it. Everything you've said totally rings true.
Landscape. I've went into it on all kinds of levels, and I made a book long ago in 2003, and I photographed also a lot in California. Actually, I also lived a while in Los Angeles, by the way. But I want to where why I went there is like. I'm from Holland, you know, Netherlands. Netherlands, you know, it's all man-made, man-touched. But I have an image of nature, you know, and I thought at a certain point, like, where does this image of nature come from? Because I have all these images in my mind. And I thought, yeah, maybe it's media, you know, it's film. So I had this idea it's long ago, you know, to fly to Los Angeles, to California, to see this nature I'm seeing on TV and in films, because for me, this is really remote. And I wanted to make it my own. So I thought, like, I'm going to this, like, the Great Wide Open and to all this wilderness and all this stuff, but I wanted to step through the decor, you know? I wanted to step through this backdrop and make my own image. I wanted to make it my own, you know? And then during making that, this book is called Wilderness. You can find it on my website. I found out somehow also at a certain point that I was really interested in these abstractions of nature. And then I started also making more and more. In the end of the book, the work actually gets more and more abstract. And then, this is a theme that keeps recurring past 20 years or 19 years past. But I always wanted to make something really radical. You know, I've always integrated this abstraction in projects or. But I never did it really radical. And this project, what I wanted to do with it, I really wanted to make it really radical. I had this idea, like, I'm locked up here in this lockdown, and I want to get out. I want to make something positive. And I had something like, I want to make it really radical, you know, that you really get in. And I was also, that was actually the idea.
it's interesting, like if you see them as screenshots of sorts, you know. So, like thinking also about the view cameras, the ground glass, but also the act of just like capturing something generative on a browser. It's because I still can wrap my mind around how you infuse these images with this digital condition, but it's nowhere to be pointed out, really. It's so magical to me.
Yeah, and I think also it's interesting to present it digitally right now, you know, because we have now this possibility to make an object of a JPEG. And of course, we are looking at images and photographs on the screen for a very long time. You know, the JPEG has been around, but it's also always been this intermediate thing, you know, like send me a JPEG or something like that, and maybe I'll buy a print. But now, the screens nowadays are like beautiful. I have this MacBook Pro screen, and it's, so fantastic colors. That like if I have like a full screen, it lights up, you know, like a slide projection almost, and on the screen it looks fantastic. Even, I was yesterday in the bookshop, and I wanted to leave photo books for fun, and then at a certain point I had this idea like, maybe on the screen it's much better actually. That, you know, there was this picture also. There's like. It was printed over the fold of the book, and I couldn't see part of the picture. Yeah, it's maybe a crazy idea, but then I thought, like, yeah, maybe we've got something. So I'm also planning to take this a little bit further, and I really want to make like an exhibition, an installation, to present photography as JPEGs. But I have to think about it. But that is something I would want to do with this project too. That it's, yeah. I think you probably know the Water Lily Rooms by Monet. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, I think you have one in MoMA, but it's also in Zurich, in Kunsthaus. And yeah, that you could go into a room and have this immersive experience of this nature tableaus coming at you. You know, that you can see it on a different level. You know, that shapes and colors, and you can just get into that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to remind everybody that you can come up at any time and take the stage, please. This is kind of like a open mic thing. And another just comment, Misha, it's you photograph nature as data, you know, and that's also to me very, very interesting.
Yes, for sure. No, it's the basics is of course data, and actually the image of the photo is actually not on the screen, but it's in the temporary memory of the computer. So
yes.
I think this is also a nice idea. Like everybody thinks, oh, these pictures in the screen, but it's not, you know, it's in memory. I also like this on a conceptual level.
Because data, when you see, for instance, when you open a digital file, a digital picture on a word processor, you can see all the code behind it. And the first thing you realize when you see code as you would see an image, it's this absolute flattening. You know, it's absolutely flat. There's nothing salient. You know, there's no rule of thirds. There's no anything to rest your eye upon. You know, it's just this sea, flat sea of symbols. And your images behave in that way, like they bear that condition too.
Yeah, I think that's a great compliment. It's really, yeah, that's really how I look at it too. That
because especially how you put them on the website, you know, they are all together. There's no white space at all. So that to me invites to, a transcendental view, you know, from the spectator, because in a way, and I say this as a compliment, there's nothing to see, you know, it's again, this data spread, this data sheet, and it needs to be, transcended. You need to go further. And that's also very beautiful, like this clinical representation of the mystical, you know, it's because you can just stay on this beautiful wallpaper of layer you're presenting to us, you know, it asks more of the spectator, inevitably.
For sure. Yeah, and I really didn't want this white space, because then it becomes little pictures. It's stupid to say, but my first sketch, it was immediately like it had to look like this. That you can go in. You know, it's all about, you know, like getting into contact, like trying to, you know, that's what we always try, maybe as humans, you know, to connect to what's around us, you know. And somehow, sometimes that's really hard, you know, because you have always this thinking, you're always thinking stuff. And when you think something, you make a story. And this story is always in between you and the world. But I just wanted to work like meditating, you know, just get rid of all the language, get rid of all the story. I just wanted to to see it, you know, as it is. And in that sense, also the camera is a great tool for doing that, because the photographic camera is in a way like a looking machine, and that's also how I regard it. You know, it's a machine that makes pictures. It looks at the world at a different way we do, but it's still reality. And if you look at the picture, it's not reality, but it's a reality. Yeah, how we can't see it, but we can see it through this camera. You know, in this way, like also comparing to like a telescope or a microscope, you know, that's more extreme. Like you want to look at the planet, or you want to look at little animals, but a normal camera makes you look really good at the world, you know, like what we think is reality. But actually, if you look at photographs really well, you can learn a lot more about reality than you can see it just with your eye, but actually with your brain, of course, because there's always this thinking there.
And yes.
Yeah, that's what I love about photography. That's why I'm interested in photography too. Yeah, it helps me to step out of my own brain, you know, my own limitations of seeing the world are relieved, you know, in a bit by this machine.
Yeah, it makes me think of also like language and photography share some of the same tragedies, and one of them being that they only describe like the ripples on the surface, you know, like the ripples on the surface of a body of water, you know, but very rarely they acquire the poetic event of those ripples pointing at a bigger undercurrent that you can't see, you know, that can't be described or photographed. And that little miraculous condition is present here. And I don't say this lightly, you know, it becomes evident. I'm going through the very strange event of looking at your work, the whole space, you know, and it's getting to me in strange ways.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, you should see my films. I also make films. And my films are also very immersive. I make very... my films also are really about looking. I made a film 2 years ago about clouds and in the mountains in Switzerland, and it's about movements of clouds, and it's also you really get pulled in, and it's somehow they're very like shots of like sometimes 8 minutes or 10 minutes. You just look at one shot and you only see like the light changing and clouds changing. And it is also very immersive. I only show it in the cinema. So I also, I have presented because in the cinema it's dark, and the sound, of course, is also very important. So you're like also, I also record the sound myself, and I take also really good care of that. So you're really into this world. And I also have I made a performance with it, and I had a friend of mine who wrote music for that. But sadly, I couldn't do that live during the presentation, because that was the end of 2020 in December. I presented that, and then you couldn't have a lot of people in the cinema. So I only could have like 30 people at the time. And I wanted someone to sing, and that was not possible. But I really want to do that this year, you know, like later this year, to have a film screening with this performance. Because okay. I'm apart from photography, I also work with video a lot.
Let me give some space for Chris, who requested also the microphone.
Hello, can you guys hear me?
Hey, yeah.
I hear you.
Oh, cool. I'm actually watching one of your videos on your website right now, I think, because you brought it up. I'm learning about you as we go right now.
Great.
And it's really a pleasure to meet you, and your work is absolutely cool. Was the one you were just talking about, and I'm gonna ruin this, Verwirklichen, was that the one?
The video? Yeah, you speak, wait, it's German.
I'm stupid American. Can you say it again?
Verwirklichen. I'm I'm Dutch and don't speak. I speak German, by the way. But but the German is maybe a bit easier for me. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I was just looking at that as well. Just really great stuff. But yeah, what you're presenting right now, the generative by nature project. I'm looking at it on my biggest computer monitor as the grid style on your website. And yeah, it reminds me of noise in a way when I look at it like this, like white noise, but of course it's not white, it's explosions of color. And it really starts to resonate with me that way, on how we look at nature, you know, usually with a horizon line and things like that. And getting into these close vignettes of noise in a way, it does start as like Roberto was saying, as you look at it, you know, a little bit bigger, and all together, it does start to create different types of emotional responses. The explosions of pinks and oranges that come out in some of them are really just fabulous when that happens. Can you talk about maybe what you thought in the beginning of this, and also about, you know, viewing it on a screen? You were talking about a huge installation of this, and it looks like you make like 50-inch prints in reality.
Yeah, I make large prints. Yeah.
Is it, for me, the hardest part has been, you know, translating work that was meant to be seen in feet or meters, down to like a 3-inch phone. Does that affect this work to you, or did you kind of design? I want to see this at 100% so bad it's killing me. I want to look into these.
I can tell you something about this. Yeah, no, that's a very good point. Yeah. Well, what I'm seeing the JPEG, like we created it into a, like a digital object there through the Earth NFT, as like a different way of looking at photographs. So, in my opinion, you have now the photo book, you have the photo print, and you have the JPEG. And I would make large scale prints of other projects, but I also have made a lot of photo books. So if you look into a photo book, it's always a different experience than if you look at a large print. And yeah, that is just how it is. But it is not better or worse, or it's just different. And I think what the JPEG adds in a way is that it emits light. That you really, you know, photography is light, and it falls on your chip, and it becomes data. And this data, you use it again to emit an image in light. And I think that's what I like about the screen, that the colors, which are so important, really are really bright, you know. But yeah, I have also made a print of this work. I have like a large format printer here in my studio, and I can tell you, in print it's even more amazing. Yeah, I made a very large matte prints. And yeah, there's so much detail. And then if you look at it as a print, it's a different experience. You know, it's more quiet, of course, because the screen, it's a little bit up, you know, always, because this light, and there's like it's also flickering with a frequency. You can't really see it, but actually it is. You know, actually it's just it's doing something. And yeah, when it's a print, it's much quieter. And yeah, with a print, you can be together in a quiet room and have a different experience. But I think both experiences are valid. And what is nice, of course, about the JPEG is that you can all look at it right now, and you're engaging with it. And yeah, this print actually is right here in my studio, but nobody can see it.
Yeah.
So that's also great. And what I also experienced with this drop is, is that I have a website, you know, you've been looking at it, but yeah, I've always had a website, you know, and there's stuff on it and people look at it, but I had no, yeah, but now with this, and I'm also doing this timed drop, you know, there's also going to be a lot more, we're just before half, you know. It is like having a real exhibition, actually. I'm also like nervous when I'm going to mint this image, because it's like also really, it has to mint at a certain time, and I feel people looking, you know. Also, we are here now in this space, and if I would just have put some images on my website or Instagram, I would never have been into a space, you know, if you will. It would have just, yeah, been out there. But now through this process, you know, to a kind of digital storytelling with JPEGs, you are engaged and in the work, you know, you're engaged with JPEGs. And yeah, I think that this is something great about NFT also. It's the magic of believing in NFT that somehow makes this possible.
There's something very strange, Misha, like you had, I don't know, like a right-click save protection on the website or something. But I've been playing with that. The other day, I wanted to tweet something about you, so I was trying to download one of the images. And if you download the image and you open it in Photoshop, all you open is a 20-pixel grid of maybe what is like the center of the image. I'm just posted my result here. You can see it above. but what I'm doing is I'm saving all of those, like the little poor man collection, Misha the Reader collection. You know, it's like a little extra.
That is
funny. But actually, if you click, there's a little word called IPFS. If you click on IPFS, you get the actual image on IPFS, and you can just save and download easily, by the way. Just a tip.
Okay. But it reminded me of those like 8-bit pixels every...
Yeah, I've seen that. For
and
sure.
Every one of the images give you a different result, you know? So, yeah. So maybe...
I like your collection idea, Roberto.
That very, our, very our, great idea. Derivatives, actually. Yeah.
It's the first collaboration now.
Great. Yeah, you make great work too. I've also been studying your work today bit, of course.
Thank you.
Because I was interested also what you were doing. And I also made a little post in the Technology and Philosophy channel about your work.
Yeah.
And you really have beautiful stuff. You really to understand it, you really have to read about it, what you write, and then, yeah, it opens up, you know. I think you make very interesting stuff.
Thank you. Like where our practices touch.
It's
at that point I've observed about yours earlier, data, like the flattening of data, like the.
Now, there is one image, the size 50 millimeter, it's called. I've been looking at that a lot, actually, today.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of Starry Night by Van Gogh somehow, because like it's a standing image, and it's like cypress trees are in it somehow. I can imagine that, and there are stars. So I see this Southern France landscape by Van Gogh. Because Van Gogh, if you look at his work, it's also on a certain level really abstract, you know. It's also about lines and structures and colors, of course. And yeah, it somehow I imagined Van Gogh. I can't really explain, but that's what I saw, you know. I found this video, it's because at a certain level, if you look at it like just on a glance, it just looks like noise, you know. But if you, I put it up a little bigger on the screen, and then it opened up as a world, actually. Yeah, very interesting.
Oh, thank you. It's just this, you know, it's like the different possibilities of reading an image, you know. And again, I always end up talking about like semiotics because it just helps a lot. Like you have the photography on one side, which has its signifiers almost always readily available. And on the other hand, you have data, you know, like a .txt data file. And in the middle, you have all of these possibilities. So I'm right now looking at the middle, you know, that's why with that sensibility, I look at your work and I said, you are portraying nature as data, you know, it's to me, it's the contemporary image right now. It's data related and it's aesthetics, you know, which is this profound flatness, this absolute a democracy of meaning, because anything is salient, everything is flattened, you know, to its minimum expression. And that's completely contrary to how humans manipulate signifiers, you know, that's completely opposite. You know, like the human is always trying to kind of like grab a highlighter and make an emphasis in something. And data and all in silico processing, you know, that is not in vivo, it's not gray matter processing. It never discriminates any symbol from another. It doesn't have that need because it lacks a body and because there's nothing that's dangerous for the processing. Everything is treated the same way. And a biological entity doesn't have that possibility. You know, we are always, we need to discriminate, particularly danger.
No, for sure. And we also look, we can look fuzzy at the world, you know. We can just think the other half. And a computer can't do that. Like, that's what's also fascinating about IPFS, the Interplanetary File System, is that you upload your image, your data, and then you get a hash. And this hash is an exact translation of this data. But if you would only change one little pixel of this image, you would get a totally different hash. And for the computer, it would be like totally different. But yes, for the human eye, it would be
exactly
the same image. And exactly, that's fascinating, of course.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's important for in silico processing. You know, it's just like if there's a bit or a byte or whatever that's different, everything changes. That's where they put the emphasis, if you want to put it in those terms, completely different to a biological entity. And so the possibility of updating a landscape image with all of these, let's say, zeitgeisty contemporary values, to me, it's incredibly irrelevant, you know, very, very important. It speaks of today.
Yeah, well, what I really want to do is to make these images also as open as possible. So I make this image, but you have to interpret it. And I don't want to steer people in a certain direction, because I want the images to trigger the notion of beauty inside yourself. So, you know, Agnes Martin, a painter, yes, which I'm a big fan of, she has this story she tells to her niece. You know, she shows her like a flower from her garden, and she asks, like, is this a beautiful rose? And the niece said, like, oh, yes, it's a beautiful rose. And then she holds this rose behind her back, and then she asks again, is this a beautiful rose? And the niece said, yes, it's still a beautiful rose. So where is the beauty? The beauty is not in the rose, but the beauty is in you. You know, it's in your mind. You know, even if you don't see the rose, you still see beauty. And that's what I try to do also with my work, is it's a starting point for your brain, you know, to, I hope to trigger something in your brain that you maybe experience stuff in your brain or a level of beauty you wouldn't be able to see otherwise, you know. But yes. Maybe or you could, but I wanted to be open. I don't want to say like, look at this, you know, and you have to think this, you know, when you look at this, because I have this idea that you have to think about the world like this, you know. No, it's up to you, you know. It's this openness and just let it get to you, you know. Get in and experience.
So Misha, I heard a rumor that
you
were going to accept 24 easy interest-less installments to pay for your work. Is that true?
What? No, what kind of rumor?
No, it's lie. I don't know, maybe, right? With a credit card and 24 monthly payments, you know, to get generative by nature.
No, I don't know. No, I haven't. I don't think.
Well, I'll DM you about that.
But you can. Oh yeah, you want. Okay, you want to have like install. You want to pay off a work. That's what you want. Or
yeah, maybe just considering.
Everything is possible. I do installments, of course. That that's also, it's not a project for flippers, you know. That's also why I'm trying to, I'm minting of course on Tezos, because it's very energy efficient, and I couldn't make like a project about the positivity of nature on a very energy efficient blockchain. But yeah, then again, it also, the sales are slower, you know, because the Tezos is not Ethereum.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like that also about it. It's like a slow drop, and yeah, the taking the work, you know, like at this point, you know, everybody can experience it, and that's what I love about it. And at a certain point, of course you can, if you want to do installments, just let me know. You can DM me. I'm
25 installments of 750 Tez.
Yes.
The whole series.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's ambitious.
Can I just jump
in? If you have like offers or propositions, you can always DM me.
Yeah. Please, Alia. Come.
Well, hopefully everybody can hear me now, but listening to you both speak of your work was so interesting. And what struck me is, I think even though you're both coming from very different directions in the work you're making, I think there's so much overlap. And I know we talked a little bit about it, but really you're presenting this information, right? And it puts it on us to read it and to read the photograph. And there's something very, I don't want to say still, but I want to say slow about both of your projects, most recent projects. And I think there's something about, it's the opposite of fast art, right? Like you want to spend time with it. You want to read it slowly in the way that there's always something else to be found. Like whether it's an Agnes Martin is a good analogy. I also want to think about Via Selmans and her drawings of like the desert floor and the ocean. And you can just sort of, there's not a lot happening, but everything is happening. And I see that in both of your works.
That's absolutely, that's spot on. And I insist with that idea of there's nothing to see here. You know, like there's nothing salient, it's all flat. You know, again, it's like it's an effort to visualize data in, let's say like data is a low level language, you know, and we're just lifting it enough to deserve a gaze. Let's say, you know, something like that.
Yes.
I love the
yes.
idea of deserving a gaze, because we're so pulled in like a gazillion different directions every day, right? And where do we want to place our attention? Because that's something we're 100% in charge of. And I think I, for one, my sort of strategy is to be very particular about where I decide to place my attention. But you know, this work, I want to spend time with it. And it's sort of like going back to the idea, I think, Misha, you were speaking of meditations where you're sitting still and yet there's a universe of just chaos happening inside your brain, but you can't really privilege one thing over another. You can't, as Roberto said, you don't want to like, you can't really go in with a highlighter and pick the best parts. You just have to let it wash over you. And I think that's a really valuable proposition.
Yeah, for sure.
It requires a squinting gaze, you know, like if you close your eyes a little bit, you know, it's strange. And because you don't know where to rest yourself, that's where the need to spend more time with the work presents itself somehow, you know, and this question of transcending the retinal surface in a way, you know, and then you encounter this proposition to go somewhere else. But it's like Aliyah, like Tinder, you know, like all these possibilities of relationships are just flattened again to data, to a swipe left, to a swipe right. Once you enter Twitter, especially after being offline for a couple of days, again, you see all this sea of signs and things all trying to take you away, but in the take your attention away. But in the end, it's again, you encounter that flatness, you know, it's like everybody's screaming for attention until everything becomes just a background of a almost silent noise, you know, like a TV. And also like that image is relevant for Misha and myself and many of us that are here in the room, the TV without a signal, you know, but it's still, because it has a kind of horror vacui, it cannot display nothing. It still gives us this static, you know, and something along those lines, maybe.
Yeah, I think that the chaos, that word chaos is what first comes to mind in this work. And then you sit with it a little bit and the exact opposite happens to you. It's this real peace and relaxation that comes. So the first impression is wrong immediately as you sit with it. It's really great in that regard.
Yes.
We're close, well, within an hour. I will be interested in this last minutes of the space. If anybody else wanna comment something, ask a question, I don't know. In anything, it's valid. You can even announce your car if you have it for sale. Not a problem. Anything you need. Just.
Misha, I just want to go back to one thing you were talking about, the difference, because this is something I've been certainly thinking a lot about coming from, you know, making physical pieces. But the difference between, you know, the book, the print, and the JPEG, and how I'm finding myself not wanting to privilege one over the other, but instead to sort of accept them all in the same way. The sort of analogy that I've come up with is like, it's like listening to a song or an album, and, you know, you can sort of listen to it on your phone with headphones as you're working out or whatever. And maybe that's the screen version of it, the JPEG version. And then you can sit and studiously listen to it, which we probably don't do as much as we used to anymore. Like when you put on an album, like a record or something, and you're listening to it and you're not focused on 10 other things at the same time. And then, you know, going to the exhibition for me is like seeing the band play live always.
Yeah. Maybe that's a nice analogy. But there's a little thing is that music works on a different level in your brain, because music is in itself more direct. You know, it's always, you really, even if you have like from your iPhone and on your earplugs, you really can't escape it somehow. You know, you can't close yourself off from sound, but you can easily close your eyes, you know. That's the difficulty with like making images is, the images somehow feels like an intermediate always, you know, like the JPEG or the print or the book. It is an intermediate experience where you have to concentrate and you have to you let yourself get into it. But music, it you can't escape it. It just grips you, you know, most of the time. And that's, and I think it's a great analogy you're making. But yeah, only the arts don't really are quite different. Yeah.
No, I think that's right. And, you know, I work in scent as well. And, you know, you can't turn off your nose. Like, I mean, I guess you can breathe through your mouth, but it's like music like that. You can't sort of, I guess you could turn on the volume. Anyway, I think you're making a really valid point there.
Yeah, I have also two cats. And if like there's like really not loud noises, you know, they can't even pluck their ears. They can't even do their little paws against their ears. You know, they really have to experience noise. You know, it's quite something to think about it.
Chris, I see you here.
Hi. Hi, Misha.
Hi.
I was looking at the looking through your images, and it's something that's come up previously in the course of this week, and there's kind of an intimation of the turning point of landscape imaging, where if you think of the kind of romantic notion of landscape, where the image is all about how the human places themselves in relationship to the image. They might imagine themselves in the image. You know, I'm thinking like, and then you've got somebody like Caspar David Friedrich, where the human is placed central in the image as this kind of overlord of the image. And the kind of the way you're presenting landscape is something quite different, because it's, you're presenting a space which is just for nature. There is no space for the human in there, which is really interesting. So I just wondered if you had any thoughts about, you know, there's this relationship about how the viewer positions themselves in relation to the landscape in the way that you did.
Yeah. I've all kinds of ideas about that. Yeah, the romantic vision, it's about the word they call the sublime, you know, and the sublime, it's subliminal. It means being on the threshold, on just about to cross a border. But in romantic painting and romantic art, they never really actually cross this border, because there's also this notion of fear, because there's like an imbued fear for like the imaginary world, which is actually a bit too wild and too romantic for the romantic person. So he's always on the threshold. And that's also this person David Caspar Friedrich puts into his landscapes, is because he's the threshold, you know, this person. You can't get farther than him, and you experience the landscape like from his view. But my images are about crossing this threshold. I want to step over this threshold, and I want to engage with the world. And if you maybe have also looked at my Twitter bio, it also says eco-sexual. And with eco-sexual or eco-sexuality, I mean that you try to really engage with what's around you, you know, in an almost erotic way, how you like to not seeing the world as something, you know, you're not part of but that the world in a way, you know, is your lover, you know, you if you look at your lover, you know, you also want to be intimate, you want to be close to your lover. And that is also like the ecosexual position in a way, is wanting to be close with reality, you know, not being on the threshold like the romantic, or being having the bird's eye view of the rationalist like Descartes. You know, he's the bird's eye view. So he looks at this world as this organized machine that operates in all kinds of ways, and you know, he never gets close. But yeah, I want to go over this threshold and let myself immerse.
Yeah, immersion. That's very much what you're saying. Yeah, thank you.
Yes. Oh, thank you.
Orto, are you there?
Hi. Yeah.
Hi.
Hi, Misha. I love this work. I've been following it for a month or so, and it's so beautiful. I thought that it was legitimately like algorithmically generated at the start. You know,
it actually is. Huh? The nature has also this mythical, magical algorithm. These shapes, they're everywhere. Year they're different, but they're still the same. You know, it produces leaves.
I have a comment, and Chris, your comment, and Misha, your response to that comment just now, like, was exactly what I wanted to ask about, which is that in these images, and I'm staring at them right now, you know, you can see like bits of sky, right? You can tell that they're oriented in a sort of vertical fashion in the way that we humans kind of see the world, right? Where the sky is up on top, and on the bottom, it's sort of like on the bottom, you can often see ground, or it gets darker, or in some of the images, you can even see water reflecting down near the bottom of the image, right? I'm interested, and I think maybe you've just said stuff about this, but I'm interested in the literal blurring and disappearance of the horizon line, right? I'm also skeptical, Misha, as I think you just expressed, I have skepticism about sort of the aerial view, right? Because it, of course, as you point out, is the view of the sort of Cartesian view, that the quote God's eye view, right, that pretends to know everything all the time, right? But also, like, more materially, because it's the view of like drone warfare, right? It's the view of like military dominance and mass death, right? State sponsored mass death.
Exactly. You can only do that from a drone, you know.
That's right. That's right.
And go home and eat a sandwich.
Yes. Yeah. Well, so my question then is, you know, have you ever been tempted to toy with the perspectives here, right? Well, I guess it's a two-part question. My first question is, are all of these images made shot from sort of eye level looking forward, right? Or are you aiming your camera down or up in different ways, right? And then the second part of that question is, have you ever been tempted to sort of, you know, rotate the images on their sides or flip them upside down, right? They're such beautiful gradients, and the gradients, I think, would actually function upside down, for instance, right? But it would be disorienting. I wonder if you have any thoughts about that, right? Sort of blurring that border, like
appearing
the horizon in a different way.
I told already that I always work from a tripod. So I set down this tripod, and most of the time it's also from a standing level, but not always, by the way. And I'm quite tall also, which is and that's why my eye level is a little bit higher than of most people. But what I always do, I always level my camera. I have this leveler, and I always put it on ground, on horizontal level, because I really want to make the relation to reality real in a way. So I always think it really needs to be leveled on the horizon. So even when you don't see an horizon, it's actually leveled to the horizon. Because I think, but maybe I'm not right, but I think you can feel it. If the leveling is not right somehow, I think it brings balance. So even if you have this really abstract image, they're all horizontal balance. So if you would take away all the plants, you would see just a straight horizon. And sometimes I will tilt the camera and I can tilt it up and down. That's the freedom I give myself. And sometimes I would also go a little bit lower to have like a more straight view, because that's I feel most of the time even more beautiful. I really try to, if possible, to really set it straight, so like horizontally and vertically, and then just try to make my composition around it. So I really have to work on that, you know, like I don't shoot these photos very fast. I mostly work like for like 20 minutes or maybe half an hour on a picture, you know, before I really know where I am. And then in the meanwhile, I'm just losing myself in this camera. So sometimes I also get really lost, and then I really have to stand back and wait like for a few minutes to, and then look again, because then I see new stuff. You can really lose yourself sometimes. But yeah, on your second question, I have thought about it, and about tilting work, and of course just tried it, you know, of course, and see what it did. But somehow, yeah, because I'm so keen on presenting reality as real as possible with a camera, yeah, I can't really present work like like rotated, or but I can see that it could be beautiful, but yeah, it feels against something I want to do, you know. It would feel to me like intervening somehow in the process, I would be playing. I would not be honest in a way, you know. I want stuff really. I want it to be extremely straightforward, extremely simple, and I want it to just to be honest, you know. And that's also why I'm this chronological drop I'm doing is also, you can see my process. You can see on certain days I made like three good pictures. One day I made only one. But there are also days I didn't make good pictures. And some days, you know, the sun wasn't shining. So I'm now dropping for almost 2 weeks. There's no drop. And it's because, like, I'm in the Netherlands. And we have, like, we can have really violent weather in spring, actually. That is really stormy and rainy. So it's probably rained for 2 weeks. And I couldn't shoot. But even when I go out, you know, then, yeah, sometimes, you know, you're just see it, you know, you're just going into it, and yeah, and you can see this in this drop. So this drop also reveals my process, and I wanted to do that also because what I really love about the blockchain technology is the transparency, that everything is really transparent, and it's in a way, yeah, it's also honest, you know. I want to expose myself, and that's one of the aspects of this whole crypto thing where I like, is that I by exposing myself and to be honest and to be transparent, I can feel free. Because if you're hiding stuff or you're keeping up appearances, you're not really free. You're holding yourself captivated, you know, in the image of someone else. And yeah, and that's not what I want, you know. I this is my image, and I want to live it, and yeah, that's why I love this transparency thing. Not that I don't like secrets, of course, because that's also a very important part of human nature, and we need secrets, of course. But I also think it's really nice to can to be really transparent, you know, and simple. Hope that answers a bit your question.
Well, that was amazing. I want to check if there's another comment still from someone. Well, I think we're doing okay. Okay. Misha, if that's okay with you, maybe we should stop here. Definitely, maybe we can make some more conversations. I love lots of things you said. I'm very happy to have experienced your mind for this hour.
Thank you.
It's a joy. I love your brain. yes, thank you for being around in this space.
And thank you for giving me the opportunity to show my brain.
No, I live for that. I enjoy these little events so much. To me, sharing ideas is the most safe adventure there is. It's just ideas, so we should play with them, you know, like almost carelessly. It's a tool that was made for that purpose, and I think it brings profound enjoyment. It gives everybody insight, it connects, and so it's just beautiful to have these opportunities. And thank you, everybody, who stick with us. Thank you for being around.
Yeah, and, thank you.
We'll see each other.
Yes, we will see each other in space.
till next Friday. And Aliyah, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's like my Friday morning thing now. I love it.
Fantastic.
It's going to be my Friday evening thing. So,
okay.
Looking forward to the next time.
Beautiful. See you around, and I send you a hug, and have a great weekend.
Yeah. Thank you. Have a great weekend, all. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. See you then. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.